And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith. Today is a special in-depth edition of the Wild Side News. It's your chance, once again, to learn the good news about amazing people doing great things. Today, Floresta, a beautiful name for a mission of grace to the people around the world hit by the impacts of deforestation. Floresta, when I return here on the Wild Side News. Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith. Last day of March, spring is in the air. The longer days are warming the rebirth of yet another year. The Wild Side News watches each week as more and more of you tune in. I've got some terrific long-time listeners. Thanks. You know, nature and the environment keep gaining significance in the lives of people around the earth. It's about time, in fact. It should have been done long ago. So each week, more and more people want to know about what's happening in the wild worlds of wonder. That is where the Wild Side News is truly unique, because anyone like yourself coming into the voice of the earth can come in anywhere and find the subjects, the shows, the guests who appeal to you. If you're a new listener, head to the archives and listen to anything that gets your attention. We keep growing in many ways. This week, we are expanding the concept of the voice of the earth to include commentary by leading spokespeople. On the front page, you'll notice a link to a commentary by Dave Foreman, the legendary maverick warrior for the earth, founder of Earth First, advocate for action. I encourage all of you to visit the Dave Foreman Forum and listen to his 2005 Earth Crisis commentary. In the weeks and months ahead, he will be adding new concerns and we will be adding new voices to the voice of the earth, leading writers, researchers, advocates, and others who speak their minds. It's to the point, it's personal, and it's pertinent. And I wanted to tell all of you how you will be adding your personal commentaries in the months ahead. But today's show is a special edition of the Wild Side News, and so I will have to put that off until next week. But if MP3 means anything to you, then you have a clue on how this will work. So tune in next week for this important new feature. This week is a special edition of the Wild Side News. Today, we will be talking with the executive director of Floresta, Mr. Scott Sabin, and Floresta's director of development, Joy Berry. I'm sure you, like me, are increasingly alarmed at the stories of the relentless destruction of forests around the globe. At some levels, it has global significance, as the loss of massive forests is like removing a lung from the body of the earth. And from the perspective of animal and plant diversity, the current and future loss of whole ecosystems is something that continues partly because we cannot even comprehend what that really means. History will be left to mourn the loss of thousands and thousands of plants and animal species. Last week, I featured John Perkins, whose Confessions of an Economic Hitman explains the effects these development strategies, which tear out whole forests and tear at the souls of indigenous peoples, have on the future of planet Earth. I just received an email, unfortunately in French, but it appears that Brazil has authorized the clearing of 50% of their remaining forests, already devastated by massive clearing. Today, we go in-depth with an organization that is on the ground in countries around the world working to restore balance to the people and communities which are forced to try to survive when their forest lands are torn away, or even worse, when they themselves are forced to destroy their forests in order to make enough money to survive. Floresta is a faith-based organization that refuses to give handouts to the needy. Rather, they have a fully developed program of human and social reawakening that is having dramatic success. I invite you all to take a journey of hope and perhaps the spirit and dedication
may inspire you to become directly involved. And so now, a special edition of the Wild Side News. It's Floresta.
One of the wonderful things about our planet is the fact that there are people all over the world. And they've been there for millions and millions of years. But here we are now in the beginnings of the 21st century, and some of those peoples and their places on the planet are finding new challenges that they've never had to really face before. And so there are lots and lots of people who, and organizations who are really stepping up to the plate and trying to make a difference and assist some of these people. Some people would call them indigenous peoples. We would call them agrarian people, holistic peoples. And they're everywhere in the world. But they are beginning to face some very unique challenges. And today we're going to talk with an organization, Floresta, that is very much involved in, on the ground, working with people and trying to give them opportunities to achieve self-sufficiency, repair their environment where it's been damaged, and give them options for a sustainable future that otherwise, and without their help, they may not have had a chance to realize. So joining us today to really focus on this topic is Scott Sabin, who's the executive director of Floresta, as well Joy Berry, who is the development director of Floresta. And you can easily find out a lot more about Floresta at floresta.org. So, Scott, let's start with you and give us a sense of Floresta. Give us a sense of how it is that Floresta came to be, and then also let's talk a bit about your mission.
Floresta was founded about 20 years ago by a group of Americans and Dominicans who had been working together doing hurricane relief following Hurricane David. And they became frustrated in giving out basically food aid and handouts day in and day out without addressing any of the root causes. So they decided to dig a little deeper and see why people were unable to make a living for themselves. And came to the very interesting conclusion, and it's especially interesting when you consider kind of the who these people were and the presuppositions they went in with, but they came to the conclusion that deforestation was one of the key causes, one of the root causes of rural poverty in the Dominican Republic. So they founded Floresta with the idea of addressing this vicious cycle of deforestation and poverty. And it's maybe helpful to look at that vicious cycle and understand it a little bit. Basically, rural deforestation causes poverty. Rural people, subsistence farmers, people who depend on the land for everything they eat and sell, are dependent on their soil and their water, first and foremost. And those two things are directly related to the health of the forests. The trees essentially act as a sponge. And so a forested hillside absorbs the water, which percolates down into the watershed and comes out as healthy, clear streams. Without the forest, that runs off and causes some of the landslides. We saw catastrophic landslides this last year in Haiti, directly as a result of deforestation. So those are some of the ways that deforestation causes poverty. But what's interesting is it's oftentimes a vicious cycle. Poverty impacts the environment. The poor are forced to clear marginal land for agriculture. They're forced to, oftentimes they're forced to sell charcoal as a income of last resort. You know, it's easy to underestimate that, especially sitting here in America. We know how important oil is to our economy. Well, if you can imagine it, charcoal is just as important in Haiti. 80 to 90% of the energy in Haiti comes from charcoal. When there's no other way to make money, you can always cut down a tree and sell the charcoal. And that oftentimes is the income of last resort for the poor. And so you have this vicious cycle of poverty causing deforestation through clearing and through charcoal, and that deforestation causing further poverty.
Very complex.
Yes.
I think a lot of people who think about local farmers, local people who are agrarian-based and self-sustaining, when they hear about deforestation, they somehow imagine that they're actually living off the forest. And what you're painting another perspective here. and that in essence the forest serves as kind of a buffer to make their life more gentle and more balanced.
That's absolutely right. We're looking at people who kind of are living on the edge of the forest, and one of the fact that points directly at one of the main tools we use, which is something called agroforestry, which is a mixing of agriculture and forestry, planting trees and crops together to take advantage of both. And it's oftentimes an excellent way to build a buffer around the native forest to develop a more sustainable and more long-term agriculture. You know, many people, especially working on hillsides, are forced to move and clear new land every couple years. That's the basis of Swidden agriculture. It doesn't work very well on hillsides, but agroforestry makes that same field usable and productive for years as opposed to maybe 2 years.
The vision is the fact that prior to the deforestation processes, these people lived quite in harmony with their forest and the processes that led to their survival.
It varies obviously from country to country, but most often they've been practicing sustainable agriculture for generations.
So what brought about then this change, this process of deforestation? What's driving that?
There are a couple of things. One is increase in population. Population density forces people to move further and further into more and more marginal lands. A second piece is that the best lands have been appropriated by larger corporations, large-scale agriculture, again, forcing the more marginalized people up into the hills and into the mountains. And then a third thing that you see in a lot of places is migration systems. Some of the most incredible deforestation has been brought about by migration or transmigration plans to move people out of urban zones and develop areas, say, in the Amazon or in Southeast Asia.
So as a result, the forest is gone in many cases. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
And so, therefore, talk about the challenges that they then face.
Well, Haiti is probably one of the clearest examples where 90%+ of the native forest is gone. As a result, most of the topsoil has washed away. People are now farming essentially bedrock in a lot of places. And the rains are unreliable. The streams and rivers no longer flow. I mean, one of the things that's been fascinating to me is to look at the health aspects of deforestation. You know, it has a tremendous economic impact and then a follow-on health impact that is just phenomenal. It's impossible to overestimate the importance of that. I mean, essentially what you're doing is moving from a, you know, I don't want to overestimate, but a Garden of Eden to a desert. And you can just think about what it would be like to, without irrigation, live in the desert. And you get some idea of the challenges that people are facing.
Correct. That sounds like an enormous challenge. You come into an area like that, how in the world can you help?
Our mission is reversing deforestation and poverty and looking at both sides of that vicious cycle and addressing both sides, addressing the economic and the environmental sides of that vicious cycle. And there are four basic tools we use. The first is community development, and that's really helping the communities to take stock of their own situation, take responsibility for their own problems, and start to develop their own solutions. It's a confidence-building process. The second one is innovative agriculture and forestry. And really, we're talking about a whole host of different sustainable agricultural techniques and sustainable forest management. And the intersection of the two, which is agroforestry, as I already mentioned. And then credit, specifically microcredit, which can really leverage the gains made in the agricultural sector and help people to diversify beyond that. And then the third is discipleship. We're a Christian organization, and by working with and through the local churches and teaching people principles of servant leadership, we can help to make what we're doing sustainable.
Let's start with a community concept. How is it that you begin to build that? You suggest that's the first step.
Mm-hmm. Well, the example I like to give of that is example, it comes from a village in Haiti, a place called Cavanac, which is high up on a ridge. You can actually see the Caribbean and the Bay of Port-au-Prince on both at the same time from that ridge. And a place that's incredibly rocky. And I remember that 7 or 8 years ago, my first trip there, just a funny little story, it was about a 2-hour walk up these very steep hillsides. I'd been kind of feeling ill, so I stopped about halfway to rest. I was there with our Haitian director, a fellow by the name of Dezo. And the two of us were stopped there, and a couple of elderly ladies with 5-gallon buckets of water on their heads came trekking up the hill past us and waved and said, "Bonsoir, Blanc," which is basically, you know, good afternoon, white guy. And they asked us, where are you going? And we said, well, we're on our way to the community meeting in Cavanaugh. And they both kind of giggled and said, oh, so are we. We'll tell them you guys will be along in a little while. And then they continued on up the hill with their 5-gallon buckets full of water. But when we arrived at this community meeting, we found a group of about 50 people, 40 to 50 people, very discouraged. And frankly, several of them came up to me on the side, hands out, asking for money, asking for things. But during the course of this meeting, a woman stood up and said, listen. She started naming organizations. She said, so-and-so's been here, they gave us food, they're gone. And she was very confrontive about it, too. She kept going, organization X has been here, they gave us food, they're gone. How are you going to be any different? And I was a little bit taken aback, but after thinking about it, I said, well, first of all, we're not going to give anything. And secondly, we're not going to leave until you ask us to. Well, for the first couple years, and our staff was working there pretty consistently. I'd visit once a year. For the first couple years, they really weren't sure what to make of this. You know, and frankly, the group dwindled a little bit. You know, people kind of got frustrated with that. Well, they're not giving us anything. You know, when's that going to happen? But 3 years ago, back in this village, and in a similar meeting, a woman stood up and she said, we get it. We get it. What Floresta has given us is the knowledge that we're not helpless, but that God has given us talents that we can use to change our own situation. And to me, that encompasses the whole goal of what we're trying to achieve by community development. Once the people are on board and are believing that they have some capacity to change their own situation, then we can bring in, and I wasn't being strictly honest when I said we're not going to give anything, because we have a lot of talents and a lot to offer too. But until people have taken responsibility for that themselves, then our giving things is really kind of a waste of time.
So what do you bring in? How do you manage then to get their attention, get their mm-hmm. respect, or how do you build your relationship with a community?
Well, some of that, again, by putting the responsibility back on them, having them develop some of their own ideas and take the lead in a lot of the planning, and then help them to succeed in some small things.
Like
builds
what?
Their confidence.
Like what?
Like organization to make loans to themselves or to set up their own savings. In the case of Haiti, teaching them to graft fruit trees was a big step. Learning how to graft really developed some of their self-confidence. Teaching them how to practice soil conservation techniques and work with an A-frame to find the contours on the hillside. Easy, small steps that built confidence. And then there's a lot that we can teach in terms of sustainable agriculture, agroforestry, and sustainable forestry that as people have built confidence in the first step, they're ready to take follow-on steps and follow-on steps. In the case of Haiti, and I really like the way that's worked, we help them organize themselves into cooperative groups and decide on their own bylaws, elect their own officers, develop their own agenda. And when they were able to do all this, then we started talking about credit. A lot of people wanted to buy land. They were renters. And frankly, from an environmental point of view, somebody who's renting their land isn't going to put a lot into taking care of that land. They're not going to plant trees on that land because there's somebody else going to be somebody else's trees. They're going to take a very short-term view. So helping renters to buy their land through loans and that sort of thing was something they were very interested in. And we helped them to organize themselves to do that and actually, through their own dues and savings, to make some loans to the group. When they are able to do that on their own, then we met them with a contribution of capital so that they could make further loans and so forth.
So you help them structure sort of the economics, because economic survivability is mm-hmm. critical. How long does it take? I mean, you're obviously teaching them literally hands-on processes probably that relate to clean water, mm-hmm. Simple agricultural upgradings, things that relate to forestry techniques, things that they can use. And then there are other things, I imagine. What am I leaving out?
Well, there's really a whole host of technologies. You start simple with one or two, but
give us some examples, because I think it helps create the picture of what it is that you're really providing for these people.
Well, really, the heart of what we're doing is agroforestry, which mixes trees with agriculture, and trees which can provide shade, can help water to infiltrate the soil, some trees which fix nitrogen, some trees which have properties that repel insects, working on finding beneficial combinations of the two, of trees and traditional crops.
You actually do a phased-in planting process to start with fast-growing trees, so things begin, and then you phase in others as well.
Well, one of the things that's important from the point of view, and you're balancing two things. You're balancing the needs of the people, and you're balancing the needs of the environment. One of the things that's important from the point of view of developing trust in the people is fairly quick results. Obviously, trees don't always give quick results. So other things such as nitrogen-fixing cover crops or green manures can be implemented early on. In the case of Haiti, that was actually another area in which the credit helped us, in that that brings a fairly quick result. The trees, some of the trees you might not see result for at the front end, 4 or 5 years with some fruit trees, with fast growing trees for wood products, 7 to 10 years, and for native trees maybe 25 or 30 years. And so you really have to phase those in such a way that people build enthusiasm about it. If you come in from the beginning and look at slow-growing, high-value native trees, people, I'll be dead before that ever benefits me. But a couple years down the road, people are starting to think about their children. They now have the luxury to start thinking about the next generation.
And so when we return, we explore the future of the world's forests, as Floresta devotes its soul to saving the lives and livelihoods of people of the earth, when we return here on the Wild Side News.